Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today marks the ceremonial kickoff of the 2016 Oklahoma legislative session with Governor Mary Fallon's State of the State address. And given that Oklahoma is currently experiencing a revenue failure this year and an expected $900 million to $1 billion shortfall for next year's budget, one might expect the legislature to adopt a laser-like focus in solving this budgetary crisis. So you might be surprised to know that the Oklahoma legislature has just set a record for the number of bills that target the state's LGBT community. Texas used to hold it with 23 bills last session, and they don't meet this year. As of today, 26 bills that attempt to nullify marriage equality, block transgendered individuals from restrooms and public facilities, prevent schools from counseling on, quote, human sexuality, unquote, or enable discrimination through religious accommodations have been introduced in this year's session. My guest today is following these bills with intense interest. Troy Stevenson is the executive director of Freedom Oklahoma, a group which formed last year to counter the dozen or so bills introduced in the 2014 session. This year, it appears they will be monitoring 26 or more bills through the course of the spring. Troy Stevenson is my guest today here on Studio Tulsa. Troy Stevenson, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Your organization, Freedom Oklahoma, has been monitoring the bills introduced into the next session of the Oklahoma legislature. And it's interesting that with the huge budget shortfall that would seemingly really dominate the legislature's attention during this coming session, you counted by your count 25 bills that impact marriage equality regulations, school regulations concerning gay, lesbian, transgendered individuals. What do you attribute that to?
A couple of things. I mean, there are some legislators that have proposed this legislation that are true zealots for a cause, but a lot of it, we believe, is the politics of distraction. When you see this many bills that are absolutely unconstitutional on their face, it's trying to distract from the real problems of the state. I mean, we've got close to $1 billion shortfall. You've got $47 million being cut from public education just in this fiscal year. There's some real problems, and yet on the face of this, it looks like there are a handful of about five legislators just trying to be mean to people to keep people from looking at the real problems.
You mentioned five legislators. You mentioned that you felt like most of these proposals are constitutional. Would you say that, in fact, that nearly all of them are unconstitutional?
I would say by and large, most of them are unconstitutional, and the ones that would be deemed constitutional are so far-reaching that they would affect a lot more than the LGBT community. I mean, they've got some of these pieces of legislation that would allow refusal of not just gay and lesbian people, transgender people from public accommodations, but also interracial couples and individuals of minority religious communities and virtually anyone somebody decided they didn't want in their business. I mean, we're talking about taking a 40-year backstep into civil rights.
Now, out of these 25 bills, which concerns your organization the greatest?
I would say that the fact that there are, and actually we're up to 26 with the new resolution that we found last week, but I would say that the sheer amount of them is what concerns us the most. Any one of these on its own would be pretty simple to defeat, but the fact that they're throwing so much out there is the concerning part.
A number of them already attempt to amend an already enacted act, the Oklahoma Religious Freedoms Act. Several of these bills are sort of doing the same thing, correct?
Absolutely. And that, I mean, I think that's an important point. The Religious Freedom Acts are very important. This is something that's been around for over a decade, two decades. And the intent of these laws was to protect religious minorities. And what they're attempting to do in this case is to basically discriminate. I mean, what they are trying to do is discriminate. Use these very important laws to discriminate against minority communities, which is the exact opposite of their original intent.
Now, one, I was looking at a Senate Bill 898, amends that Religious Freedom Act and allows a... You know, and some of these things are still not fleshed out. The whole text is not fleshed out. They have sort of a subset of what the law is actually going to read like available at this particular point. But one quote that sort of struck my attention was the ability to act or refuse to act that substantively motivated by one sincerely held religious belief, whether or not it is central to a larger system of religious belief. I mean, first of all, that's very vague language. And two, that's much more than saying, I'm not going to make a marriage cake for a gay couple.
Exactly.
I mean, that could be, I don't want to pay taxes.
Right. I mean,
and I believe that affects my religious beliefs. And it doesn't matter if there's a larger system that holds that belief, if it's sincere or a person can prove that it's sincere, then that language would allow that.
Exactly. I mean, we're obviously extremely concerned about discrimination aimed at the LGBTQ community, but this also would allow somebody who doesn't believe in modern medicine to refuse a blood transfusion for a minor child, which currently is illegal. It would allow somebody that doesn't believe in racial equality to deny members of the African-American community or the Native American community access to public accommodations. I mean, it is so far-reaching and dangerous, and that's one of our missions, is to make sure that other communities understand exactly how dangerous this legislation is and the slippery slope that's being created if any of it were to be enacted.
Now, out of the 26 bills, how many of them, by your reckoning, are blatantly unconstitutional?
I would say the vast majority of them. The only reason they wouldn't be unconstitutional is because some of them are so broad that they are allowing discrimination against anyone, which on its face is equality. It's equally horrible to the entire community. And I think that's why some of these were written this way. I think one of the things that people don't realize is these are not bills written by local legislators. These are bills that have been taken up from national groups that have an agenda, and sometimes the legislators that are proposing them don't fully understand even what they're putting forward. They think, okay, this is something that I can use to allow discrimination against gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender folk, but they don't realize the broad scope of what they're looking at, because these are written by attorneys in other states that know that the only way they're going to pass constitutional muster is to have the broadest level of discrimination possible, which is you have the ability to discriminate against anyone you want to. Those are very concerning bills, and those are what these proposed religious freedom bills are saying. And one of the most dangerous is the House resolution, the Joint House Resolution 3044, which would actually go to the ballot and allow things like this. It doesn't have to go through the governor's desk. It doesn't have to go through committee. It goes directly from a vote of both chambers to the ballot on the next election.
Now, what is the House Joint Resolution 3044?
I'm sorry.
It's
the House Joint Resolution, and I just gave you the wrong number. House Joint Resolution 1059.
1059.
It proactively allows discrimination based on one's religious belief, and it's very much like what we've seen in Indiana or in Arizona the year before with the massive backlash, the corporate backlash that came at them. Now, this is not specifically one of these Religious Freedom Act bills. It's not a redefinition of current law. It actually goes farther and says that any private business can refuse to recognize the marriage of any individual they don't want to recognize the marriage of, and would cause the kind of massive economic backlash. In Indianapolis, it was $60 million was lost in just conference revenue the first year the first few months after they passed this law last year, requiring the legislature to come back in and amend the law. But that's going to be much more difficult if they attempt to pass some sort of constitutional amendment and they're using false language in the ballot language and convincing the public to vote for something that's not in their best interest.
Now, I missed that House Joint Resolution, but I did see Senate Bill 478, which is another version. It sounds pretty much very similar to that. It's called the Protection of Religious Freedom and the Sanctity of Marriage Act of 2015. It allows that you don't have to provide services, facilities, goods, or accommodations to sanction, I guess, a marriage that you don't approve of. But the third section says it allows people to treat any marriage, domestic partnership, and civil union as invalid.
Right.
And that seems really, really broad.
It is really broad. I mean, we're talking about allowing not a government institution, not a vetted public servant, but anyone to say your marriage is not valid. I think that's absurd on its face, and I think most of the public would say so if they weren't looking at it through a lens of bias. Now, there are many folks that are only looking at this as people in same-sex marriages, but they have to remember that in the state of Oklahoma and across the nation after last year's decision, a marriage is a marriage, and they might not like that, but at the end of the day, it's the same legal institution. So for them to create a class of discrimination, they have to allow broad discrimination across the board. And this would mean that not just the same-sex couple that lives next door to someone is affected, but every single person in a marriage is affected and could be, their marriage could be denied.
My guest today is Troy Stevenson, the executive director of Freedom Oklahoma. Freedom Oklahoma recently was publicizing the fact that, at least at this count, there are now 26 bills in the upcoming session of the legislature that substantially discriminate against Oklahoma's gay, lesbian, and transgendered population, and really much larger populations the way some of these bills are written. One of the things I was struck by is a number of these bills are sort of like petty annoyances.
Right.
I was thinking of like House Bill 2215, which would require a marriage applicant to report if they've undergone a sex reassignment surgery. And there's another one that talked about...
While you mentioned that one, I think that might sound like a petty annoyance to many, but to the transgender community, that's actually a violation of HIPAA law. It's a violation of... It's requiring them to put medical information on a publicly disclosed form. And it's essentially an attempt to out transgender individuals to the public. And unfortunately, the transgender community are faced by the largest amount of discrimination of any minority group in the country, violence and other things. And this is asking them to actually out themselves publicly on public documents. So a lot of it is meant to sound like small annoyances, but once you get down to the actual outcomes of this legislation, it can be horrifically damaging to the individual.
That was probably the wrong phrase to say petty annoyances, but it's also adding a lot of things to a marriage license application that doesn't really apply really to the marriage. You would think that's between the two individuals. And there was another bill that mentioned something like certification that you're disease-free on the marriage license. There were a whole lot of these sort of medical provisions.
That one is a direct attack on the HIV/AIDS community. Those folks who are HIV positive would have to once again out themselves and face a level of discrimination, and that outing would be on a public document and a violation of HIPAA law, which says that your medical records are private between you and your doctor. And this is an attempt by the legislator to further stigmatize people with HIV/AIDS.
There was another bill, House Bill 1125, which would, I think we had this effort last session too, which is basically to delete the issuance of marriage license altogether by the state.
Right. That is a very, last year we called that the marriage chaos bill was what we called it internally. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Now, one of the arguments that we've discussed this with members of leadership, of House leadership, and some of them think that it might not be such a bad idea to remove the power over issuing marriage licenses from court clerks and give it to the state itself, so there couldn't be a situation like happened in Kentucky over the last year. I think that one of the things that they would find really complicated about that, once again, as long as there is no discrimination and as long as marriage licenses are being issued to everyone, which they would be, but through the state rather than through the court clerks, the way they proposed amending this, it would take away a level of discrimination, but it would also take away a massive amount of revenue from counties and a lot of power away from local government. So I think that they would run into a problem that they hadn't perceived with that legislation, and that's backlash from the court clerks themselves and county governments that would lose that revenue.
There was another bill that creates something called covenant marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what that is. What?
Most people don't. Covenant marriage is a religiously sanctioned marriage, obviously, that that goes farther in law as to putting barriers and blockades up to dissolving said marriage. So if you have gone into a covenant marriage, it says that you can't just get a divorce in the same way that anyone else could. You have to go through certain levels of counseling. There's only, it has to be adultery or some other heinous violation of the marriage that allows you out of it. And because this is part of the law, you have legally signed this higher threshold contract. Marriage is a contract.
Mm-hmm.
It's saying that there's higher stipulations to the contract to remove yourself from it. Now, it's interesting that this session, this language has been proposed as gender neutral. So it actually does say that a same-sex couple could get one of these covenant marriages. The reason it's on our list of bills that we're looking at is because they could change that language at any time. That as it's written, it's something that I think most attorneys would not suggest somebody getting into because it complicates the prospect of divorce. And I know no couple goes into a marriage thinking they want to get divorced, but at the same time, making it harder to do so is something that most attorneys would tell you was possibly not in your best interest. But on its face, at this moment, that piece of legislation is gender neutral. So we're less concerned about it with the language it has right now.
My guest today is Troy Stevenson, Executive Director of Freedom Oklahoma. Freedom Oklahoma has been monitoring now 26 bills introduced in the upcoming session of the Oklahoma State Legislature, which, in their view, negatively affects the rights of Oklahoma's gay, lesbian, transgendered population. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, we've talked a lot about a lot of these acts that are really, I mean, their intent and purpose seems to be to nullify the Supreme Court decision on marriage equality. But there's a second stream, and that is really geared towards schools. Mm-hmm. And I believe it was Senate Bill 1014 got a bit of publicity early on in the new year. It prohibits a transgendered individual from using a gender-specific restroom, not of their biological origin, gender-wise, and there's several things like that. There's another bill that threatens to withhold state aid if a local board of education's accommodations sort of generate complaints and they don't handle those complaints. Can you sort of summarize some of these acts geared towards public schools?
Absolutely. There are several of them. There's a lot of them, unfortunately. It's one of the most deeply concerning parts of all of this is that they have targeted, and I don't ever use that term lightly, but that's exactly what they've done, a youth population, that they're going after young people. And one of the most concerning bills is one that Representative Sally Kern has put out there that essentially says that no counselor or teacher at a school is allowed to give any information or counsel or referral to a student, to a youth, that has to do with human sexuality. Now, human sexuality is not defined in this. What we're talking about is a piece of legislation that on its face she talks about, and those that defend this talk about parental rights. Well, parental rights only go so far. And what this legislation would do was not only bar an LGBT youth who was questioning their identity or their orientation from speaking to a trusted counselor, it would also bar that same youth, if they were in an abusive situation at home, from bringing that type of abuse to the counselor and being reported. It would bar any youth that's being abused in any kind of sexual manner from bringing that to a trusted counselor. So what this legislation, once again, we understand what she's trying to do. She's trying to keep gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender kids from getting help in schools because she thinks that that takes them down this path, which is ridiculous. That's just not how it works. But the damage being done by this is that she's placing kids that are already in abusive situations, especially in rural Oklahoma, where they don't have places to go, they don't have outlets, with no recourse except to take the abuse. And I think that anybody can look at the statistics on self-harm and suicide in youth populations and say that that's a very dangerous piece of legislation that she's put out there.
Or look at just our state child abuse and
exactly
sex abuse statistics, yeah. One of the things I wanted to ask you, out of these 26 bills, you know, I'm sure you've watched the legislature over the years, and there's kind of a quiet game that's played a lot of times, especially in election years as this is. You know, there'll be bills put out there basically just to appease a perceived base within a legislator's district. Of these 26 bills, do you think some of those are really geared towards that? I mean, I've watched really heinous bills go through one house of the legislature, fully knowing that the other house is not going to touch it with a 10-foot pole. Do you see any of that with these bills, or do you feel like this is a more substantive effort?
I think this is an effort by a small group of legislators to push their agenda and get public support behind it. I think that once the public sees the nature of these bills, the actual nature of these bills and the outcomes, that they're not going to be behind it. But you're right. In many cases, the backroom politics that goes on at the Capitol in killing these bills is very important. But with these, it's much more important that we make legislators and the public understand exactly what kind of harm they would do. Because if any of these were to slip through, it would have both economic and actual grave consequences for the state. So while we are hopeful that many of them are looked at, and in speaking to members of leadership and other legislators at the Capitol, I think a lot of them are disgusted by this legislation. But as you mentioned, it is an election year, and our biggest concern is if, depending on how polling goes and how the election cycle goes, that some folks are going to try and push this even harder to rile up a base.
Now, I was going to say, do you feel that the very nature of some of these bills is designed to prevent a legislator who comes from a conservative district from voting their heart and voting to appease a constituency?
Absolutely. And I think that's where our job becomes much more difficult and much more important, is that we reach into those constituencies and we find individual constituents and individual districts to show these legislators that there's the caricature of their district is not necessarily true, that there are gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender folks in every one of these districts, and there are people that love them in every one of these districts. And I think that's what legislators are coming to see. They're seeing that this caricature of Oklahoma, and especially of rural Oklahoma, is false. And it's one that folks like Representative Kern and Senator Silk have been banking on. They think everybody thinks like them in their region. And so we're doing everything we can to prove them wrong, because we know they are.
Well, what is your organization going to be doing during the course of the legislative session? As far as, I'm sure you'll be speaking with legislators, or what exactly?
Like I said, we're at the Capitol every day. We've got a contract lobbyist that's working with us to make sure that we get in the right rooms and speak to the right people. We're using citizen lobbyists. We're reaching out to folks in these individual districts to bring them to the Capitol and to get their voices heard. We'll have several lobby days where we'll bring people from across the state up to 23rd and Lincoln and make sure that their constituents look their legislators in the eye and say, this is what these bills will do to me. We've also got a robust plan to make sure that constituent contacts through email and through handwritten letters and through phone calls get to legislators. And basically, we're going to do everything we can to make sure that the voices of everyday Oklahomans are heard by their representatives and by leaders at the Capitol.
Now, if some of these, it sounds like if most of these bills pass, there'll be constitutional challenges. So you're looking at additional cost on the state And there will be court cases before, well, although many of them have emergency clauses, so they'll have to be challenged in court immediately if they are unconstitutional.
That's one of the great things. I mean, we work with the ACLU of Oklahoma, and we work with the National Center for Lesbian Rights and other large legal organizations, but just here locally in Oklahoma, since this legislation broke, we've had over a dozen high-powered attorneys throughout the state offer pro bono services. So we will be ready to challenge any of these laws the minute they are signed, or in the even more horrendous case of this ballot initiative, House Joint Resolution 1059, we will challenge the minute it leaves the legislature. So there's 26, potentially 27 by the time something else is introduced, bills. We've got people ready to challenge every one of them if they make it through. And to the tune of millions and millions of dollars in taxpayer money that's going to have to go to defending these unconstitutional bills.
My guest today is Troy Stevenson, Executive Director of Freedom Oklahoma, whose organization are looking at 26 bills which they feel target Oklahoma's gay, lesbian, and transgendered populations that they'll be following in this upcoming legislative session. And as we speak this morning, Governor's getting ready to give her State of the State address. If I can change the pace for just a moment, what would you like to hear from the governor today?
I would very much like to hear from the governor that that she request and strongly advocate for the legislature to concentrate on the fiscal issues of the state. We're in a state of emergency. We've got a $900 million, possibly $1 billion by the time it's said and done, budget shortfall. Our schools are losing funding. Our roads are collapsing. We've got real problems in this state, not to mention the fact that we're shaking every day from earthquakes. I think that I would hope that she asks the entire legislature to concentrate on the fiscal issues of the state and get our house in order before we start attacking members, citizens of the state of Oklahoma.
Well, Troy Stevenson, we appreciate your time today. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Troy Stevenson is the executive director of Freedom Oklahoma, which will be monitoring the 26 bills that they believe target Oklahoma's LGBT community in the 2016 session of the Oklahoma legislature. By the way, there is one bit of small news. One bill, House Bill 1345, would actually prevent employment discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity or expression. For more information on Freedom Oklahoma, visit their website at freedomoklahoma.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.